Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
What's up, Wing Wing Nation? This is Joe here. We are cooking up a national tour, but we need some info from you. So if you click the link below, there's a survey. We need to know which cities to go to. If you want us to go to your hometown, let us know in the survey below and we will consider it. It takes like 30 seconds and you get 10% off our online store if you complete it. And come see us live in person. We're going to have car meets. We're going to have contests. We're going to have sim racing. It's going to be so fun. So let us know where to go. Get 10% off merch and it's a win-win. And let's get into the show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Past Gas, and this week we're talking Jackie Eakes. I spent half the episode pronouncing it Jackie Ix and was corrected about halfway through, so just deal with that. But this guy, super legendary and accomplished racer. He won Le Mans 6 times.
He's got a couple different nicknames like the Rainmaster and Monsieur Le Mans, and just was an amazing advocate for driver safety.
He won Le Mans. I mean, you'll hear it in the intro right now, so how about we just do that right now?
Right now!
June 14th, 1969. The world's best racing drivers are lined up on the grid, outside of their cars on the SART circuit, ready to begin the notoriously intense 24 hours of Le Mans. The French flag is dropped, marking the beginning of the race, and the drivers sprint to their cars. But in this mad rush, one person stood out from the pack, an unassuming 24-year-old Belgian driver by the name of Jackie Ix. Unlike the other drivers, many of which were accelerating away with doors half closed and harnesses unbuckled, Jackie casually strolled up to his Ford GT40 in an act of protest against what he considered to be an unacceptably dangerous tradition. A year earlier, driver Willie Mairesse was screaming down the Mulsanne Straight at nearly 200 miles per hour when his door flew open. Because of the traditional running start, Willie had jumped in his car and took off before the door latch was fully secured. Willie lost control and crashed at the end of the Mulsanne. He spent the next 2 weeks in a coma and never raced again. It wasn't long before tragedy struck again. Driver John Wolfe tore away from the start of the 1969 Le Mans with an unsecured harness. As he came through Maison Blanche on his first lap, Wolfe rolled his car, was ejected, and killed instantly. Jackie had taken his time making sure his door and harness were secure, and by the time he set off, he was in last place. But Jackie drove a hell of a race, and by the time the checkered flag was waved 24 hours later, he took first. It was Ix's first victory in a very long and successful career at Le Mans, and he had proven you didn't need to be needlessly unsafe to do it. So what kicked off Jackie Ix's incredible career? How did he conquer the world's most infamous race as a driver and team leader? And why did he almost leave racing to be a gardener? This week on Past Gas, the one and only Monsieur Le Mans, Jackie Ix. Welcome back Woo! To Past Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined, as always, by Bart Bidlingmeyer.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Bart. And Joe Weber.
This story certainly doesn't give me the ix.
Nice, dude.
That's it.
We'll
That's
see about end. That.
We haven't, we haven't any better than that.
I don't even know how to follow that up. I've been dumbfounded. Yeah, welcome back to the show, everyone. Jack, I'm surprised we haven't covered Jackie
Ix. It's crazy it's been this long. We've talked about him in the Mazda four-parter that Audrey wrote.
He likes to show up in our stories.
He likes to show up, usually advocating for driver safety, which is cool.
I can get behind.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, people only listen to that sort of stuff if you're really good, I think, which he was. So thank you, Jackie.
It is kind of crazy looking back at like these kind of older racing stories and being like, yeah, none of the drivers wanted to wear goggles because they thought it made them a wuss. Yeah. It's like, what? What are you talking about? Like famously, a lot of people didn't want to wear seatbelts because they thought being trapped in a burning vehicle
right,
would be the worst way to die.
Yeah.
But being thrown out of a vehicle and cracking your back, that's way better.
Yeah. Well, you know, all racing drivers are famously as agile as gymnasts. They're all natural born Simone Biles, and they would do like a triple gainer out of the car.
Yeah.
In to safety.
This might be the first Belgian that we've done, right?
I think so.
We got some listener mail from a true Belgian himself.
Oh, all right.
Was very happy to hear us talk about the Volvo plant.
Oh, yeah.
In Ghent.
Was it Ghent? Yeah.
That was before I did my accent. Ghent, dude.
What?
It was before I did my accent.
Oh,
yeah. Get ready for another listener mail that's very angry.
Yeah.
Whenever I think of Belgium, I think of this dumb joke on the Drew Carey show where I don't know what the circumstance was. I think Mimi gave him some chocolates and she was like, oh, you know, here's some Belgian chocolates. And he looks and he goes, these aren't Belgian chocolates. These are Beldan chocolates. It doesn't make sense at all.
That was the joke.
Pretty good.
It's Beldan. So dumb. I don't know why it stuck with me for 30 chocolates. Years.
Jacques Bernard Edmond Martin Henry Ix.
Henri. Jacques Bernard Edmond Martin Henri Ix.
Thanks. Was born on New Year's Day in Brussels, Belgium in 1945. His dad, Jacques Ix Sr., was a journalist who lived and breathed motorsport. He had a blog. He created the magazine Le Moniteur Automobile, which helped popularize motorsport in Belgium and is still in print today. He was also known for writing a book called Free Men Are Free to Risk Their Lives in defense of the controversial sport during a time in which it was so dangerous that many people, including the Pope, were calling for it to be banned altogether.
Even Il Papa?
Il Papa. Jackie Sr. introduced his love of the sport to his son and took the young Jackie to his first Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps. However, much to Sr.'s dismay, Jackie Jr. showed no interest in racing. He was on his phone instead. In fact, Jackie was much more interested in gardening. This was a gut punch for his dad, who had no problem getting Jackie's older brother, Pascal, to love racing. Pascal was considerably older than Jackie and had minor success in many motorsport series before following in his father's footsteps and becoming a motorsport journalist. You guys,
why are they not called Mojos?
Mojos.
Mm, oh. I love it.
I don't know.
What are
from now on.
I have a question for you guys.
Starts here. Yeah.
Guys are are Mojos the best type of potato? Yes.
I was going to ask. You guys are both fathers.
Yeah.
Bart, your kids are a little older than Joe's baby. Like, are you trying to get them to be in the same things that you are? Whatever they want.
Try it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think now I'm going to get Oliver back into doing some sport, but we did T-ball when he was 4, and we did basketball when he was maybe just 5. And I was like, we're going to skip this for another minute or two.
Yeah.
Because
the games no one knew are what they boring. Were doing.
Yeah. Nah, it wasn't even that. It was just like, I don't think they're getting anything out of it. You know, they're just running around and it's get them.
Yeah.
Let him watch some. I think now that he's seen some sport on television, basketball, soccer, racing, all that stuff. Now it's kind of, oh, I get what's happening a little bit more.
I think that helps a lot because I think what would have helped me maybe stick with baseball specifically for longer was like if my coaches had actually explained why we're doing the things we're doing instead of just the mechanics of like how to throw a ball or like the basic rules. Yeah. Like, I mean, now I'm a much bigger baseball fan wish I had played it more as a kid.
Yeah.
Because if I had known why we were doing
the strategy. You came out to practice with us one time.
Yeah, it was fun. And then I like blew out my shoulder and like didn't come again.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. No, but it was fun. Yeah. I don't know.
I've been thinking about it because I'm into a lot of stuff. I have a lot of hobbies and I'm not going to be like, you got to be into Warhammer, little guy. It's like, no. But I do want to present to him, you know, like I'll probably take him to the skate park.
Would you be disappointed if he didn't like any of the stuff that you like though?
No, because he'll whatever he's passionate about, I want to foster that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to like be a sports dad. At the end of the day, I want to be like a guy that's yelling at the umpire, gets kicked out because he's rowdy. You
know? I think sport's important for a number of reasons, but when I was working in other sectors and on teams and sometimes managing people, I could tell which manager had played what sport almost.
Really?
Like,
really?
Yeah. Like the guys who had played high level baseball.
Yeah.
It's like, just do your job. Right. Like, you know your role, do it.
Yeah.
I don't have to, I'm doing mine, you do yours.
Yeah.
People who have played more cooperative sports, basketball, soccer, et cetera, where there's more of a flow and certainly everybody's doing their job, but there's assists. There's, you know, you're helping each other out more. You're building, there was always a different team dynamic. And I could tell also even in the teams of who was going to just look out for themselves and who would do something else. So I do think it's important that not just so you know how to move your body and have that connection as a whole human being, but you also learn how to navigate
because
people in the world.
Navigate. You need to learn how to work as a team and like put your ego aside in some cases, like especially baseball. It's like you want to make the safe out. You don't want to like be the guy who's trying to throw it 350 feet.
Even baseball, it's like, all right, this is a sacrifice.
Yes, sacrifice.
I'm gonna get this guy home.
Yeah. As well as like the politics of it too. Well, like you want to be a team player and you get rewarded for being chill and like easy to work with.
Well, Jackie Senior, we don't know if he was easy to work with, but we do know that Jackie X Jr. was not into racing, but everything changed when Jackie's dad bought him a junior 50cc zoomed up motorcycle when he was 12 to, of all things, get him to try harder in school. Jackie hated school and put in very little effort, once saying, quote,
"I learned just enough to go up into the next class each year. I was very lazy. That was my most obvious characteristic. The teachers said I was good for nothing and I wanted to leave as soon as possible."
How a motorcycle was supposed to make him like school is a mystery, but Jackie's parents were desperate to find anything to motivate him, and luckily, it did. Not long after receiving the bike, Jackie began competing in trials. His father had been a trials champion before World War II, and Pascal had just started in the series. Jackie was successful from the jump and won 8 out of 13 events in his very first year in the European Trials Championship. At 16, he won the Belgium 50cc motorcycle trials at the 1962 Metit Grand Prix. A year later, he defeated eventual world champion Roger De Coster at the 1963 Belgian 50cc Trials Championship.
So we were talking about this, I think, last week, where Americans have dirt racing, and a lot of people get into racing from dirt ovals.
Right. Dirt oval is the most, like, affordable way to get into oval racing, and like you can learn a lot of skills at transfer, and I'm assuming the same goes for trials racing.
I mean, a 50cc motorcycle is like $100 now.
Yeah, it's really, really small capacity. I'm not sure what the mid 60s trials scene looked like, because I know
it wasn't like obstacles where you're jumping from concrete block to,
because that's what the trials is now, where it's like, yeah, you're balancing on one wheel, hopping from like stump to stump, or like these giant concrete pylons, which is super impressive. But I think back then it was more of like, not a motocross course necessarily, but you had a course and then there'd be like sections where you have to go over through a rock garden or go over logs or go through some mud or something like that.
Trials and tribulations.
Yeah. My dad's cousin owns a bunch of Greaves motorcycles, which were trials bikes back in the day. And they used to do this Greaves Day out in Pozo where they would set up like a trials course. And I went out there a couple times as a kid. Really cool stuff. Really
on heavy. Your Zundap?
Not on my Zundap, but I mean, this is crazy. These bikes are, again, from the 60s, so they're all steel. The suspension is extremely rudimentary. Yeah. Heavy bikes, and you're still going over logs and stuff and like racing people going through these big-ass obstacles. So pretty cool.
But aren't these Grand Prix races that they're doing on the bike?
I don't think so. I think trials. Is what... So they're going through the countryside.
Trials.
It eventually did turn into motocross because they would do point-to-point races across the countryside.
Yeah.
And like, that was sick. Can we just make a course out of this kind of racing where we're not going over logs all the time?
Yeah.
And that,
I hate logs.
That eventually is what became motocross.
Jackie was racking up title after title in Belgium, and the Zundap supplier he was working with throughout his early racing career began to see the natural talent he possessed. The Zundap guys were also BMW importers and offered Jackie a BMW 700S to race the hill climb at La Roche in Belgium, and to enter in other races wherever he wished for the next year. According to Jackie, Zundapp was very hands-off and told him, "We'll lend you a car for a year, but we don't want to see you at the factory. You do what you want, work for yourself, but we don't want to see a single bill."
Okay.
At the hill climb, Jackie secured the fastest lap in practice and had every reason to feel confident on the starting line. Unfortunately, between practice and the green flag, it started to rain. By the time Jackie set off, the track was soaked, and he only made it three turns before dipping into a corner too hard and flipping his car.
Dang.
The incident got a ton of airtime on television, which Jackie later explained was good publicity, saying, "It was lucky because that scene was shown on television a lot. I was already quite popular on motorcycles, and now I arrived like a bomb in cars because of the incredible publicity." Jackie entered more hill climbs with a BMW 700S to varying results. His first endurance race was at his home course at the 24 Hours of Spa, where he finished 14th. Pascal also raced at Spa, but in a different class, and had won with teammate Gerard Langlois von Oppem.
These 700s are crazy looking.
Yeah.
That's like a
It's a rear engine car.
Whoa. It's like not what I would expect a BMW to look like at all. It's like a little like, yeah.
Yeah, I think that
cartoon
was,
car.
They were on the brink of bankruptcy when they had made that car. And then like the 2002 is when they really started taking off in motorsport and doing better in the consumer side too. Pascal and Gerard won in a BMW 1800 TISA, completing 271 laps around the 14-kilometer course. Wow. Jackie soon moved from his Zundapp-supplied BMW to Ford, where he was signed as a factory driver through Allan Mann Racing. The British racing outfit headed by Allan Mann had many successes throughout the 1960s.
You know, it's apropos that his name is Allan Mann, considering the team's name is Allan Mann Racing.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah.
Good one. Yeah.
I'm glad you read these beforehand so you can think of these jokes when you're going to drop them.
I have a whole notebook full of zingers like that, dude.
While competing in the European Touring Car Championship at Coupe Benelux at Zandvoort, Jackie had his first standout performance in a race car. He took wins in two different classes, first in the 1600cc class in a Ford Cortina, and a second in the over 2000cc class in a Ford Mustang, which he also took the fastest lap of for the day in. By age 20, Jackie had an overall win.
Dang. Talented kid.
Yeah. During this time, Jackie was still racing motorcycles and would sometimes race a car and a bike on the same day in two different events at two different circuits.
Jeez.
That's great.
One time he pulled off a Belgian double by competing and winning in both the Belgian Touring Car Championship and the National Motorcycle Championship.
That's
nuts, dude. Nuts.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Jackie came back to the 24 Hours of Spa in 1966 with more experience under his belt and an unrelenting desire to take home the grand prize. Having watched his brother's overall win in the year prior, he knew it was possible. If that dumbass can do it, I can too. 24 hours later, Jackie crossed the finish line in his BMW 2000 Ti, having completed the most laps in his class. His insane talent caught the eye of Ken Terrell, who approached Jackie in 1964 with the intent to sign him to his Formula 3 team. But Jackie had other obligations. As was a requirement at the time, young Belgians had to enlist in the army and fulfill a stint of national service. The offer from Terrell came at a time when Jackie could no longer put his service off. The two came to an agreement. After Jackie served 15 months in the army, he would race a Matra for the Terrell team. During Jackie's time in the army, he learned to drive tanks and then taught others to drive them as well. He once even said he learned how to spin in a tank.
Tank drifting. I'd watch that sport.
Tank Hell drifting? Yeah.
Drift over cars?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Tanks drifting at the port of Long Beach? Yeah. With his service fulfilled, Jackie was back in the driver's seat. He picked up where he left off. He took second at Zandvoort and Zolder Raceways in his 1-liter Cosworth-powered Matra MS5. The German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring wouldn't be as fortuitous, unfortunately. During the first lap, he was taken out by John Taylor, who braked too late and mangled Jackie's car. Taylor was less fortunate. He was knocked unconscious, and his engine had caught fire.
I just saw an engine on fire today.
Oh, yeah, you did.
That's very apropos, because I just saw it today.
Yeah. Officials managed to pull Taylor out, but not before he had suffered serious burns. He He was transported to a nearby hospital where he died shortly after. Shaken up by this fatal accident, Jackie took a year hiatus from racing. He returned in 1967 as a Formula 2 driver. At the German Grand Prix, he would have his breakout moment. Jackie took the third fastest qualifying time behind Denny Hulme and Jim Clark, two well-established F1 drivers who were also in F1 cars. But because he was an F2 driver, Jackie was positioned behind all of the F1 drivers. And despite his starting position and inferior car, Jackie astonished onlookers as he battled his way through the pack, eventually overtaking all 12 F1 cars.
That's insane.
Although he'd be forced to retire from the race due to suspension issues, he had made a lasting impression. Years later, in an interview, Jackie said, quote,
"I have always believed that the weekend was part of my destiny. The start of many things that came
That's
later."
That's not him anymore. That's a German.
I don't know.
He's in Germany.
Oh, so he's like a chameleon.
Yeah, he's a chameleon when it comes to...
They call me the linguistic chameleon. Yeah.
It really rolls off your tongue.
It really rubs people the wrong way. The next year, Jackie made his debut as a Formula One driver in the Italian Grand Prix at Monza in a Cooper T81B Maserati. Despite suffering a puncture on his last lap, he was still able to pull off a sixth place finish. He was forced to retire early during his second race, but scored his first podium in his third outing, taking P3 at his home Grand Prix in Belgium. After only a year in Formula One, Jackie had proven he had what it took to be a top competitor. In 1968, at just 22 years old, Jackie got the opportunity every F1 driver dreams of, signing with Ferrari.
At 22.
Yeah, that's young as hell. I mean, Leclerc, he was 24, maybe, when he signed with Ferrari.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
His first race with Ferrari would be a true test of talent and a showcase of skill he would be remembered for, driving in the rain. The race in question was the 1968 French Grand Prix at the Rouen-les-Essarts, where it was plagued with heavy rain from the start. Thanks, Bart. The conditions were exceptionally dangerous, even taking the life of Joe Schlesser. Only Jackie looked comfortable and went on to take his first F1 win. The legendary drive by Jackie earned him the nickname the Rainmaster. Jackie finished fourth overall in the driver standings in his first season with Ferrari. He probably would have placed higher, maybe as high as first, if he hadn't broken his leg during a practice session in Mexico. The injury took him out of contention later in the season and caused him to miss a crucial points opportunity at the U.S. Grand Prix at Watkins Glen. Jackie departed from Ferrari after a single season in red. He stated in an interview years later that he made the move because he felt like Ferrari had nothing more to offer him because he wanted to do a different type of racing. But Jackie didn't move on from F1 right away, and it wasn't long before John Wire and Brabham convinced him to join their racing team. He didn't get off to a great start, but after an injury took out one of his teammates, Jackie's season took off. He attributed this success to the fact that he became the sole person his team focused on.
There's two ways to look at that. One is like, well, good for him and that his team could focus on him and make him a better driver. And the other way to look at it is like, you big baby, be a better driver.
Well,
you know,
I kind of agree with him because
it's the politics of racing teams, you know, where there's always that argument. And I guess he's like, yeah, I told you.
I don't.
You would just give me more attention. I can do better.
Like they're setting up cars to what the driver wants. Mm-hmm. And if they're focusing on like a number one driver, his setup might be like way different than Jackie's. And it might be to the detriment of Jackie's driving, where mm-hmm. it's like, maybe, you know, it's not how he's used to it's being set up, but he doesn't have the political push in the team yet to like have them focus on his car more.
He eventually settled in and won both the German and Canadian Grand Prix later in the season. At the German Grand Prix, he took both pole and fastest lap, further adding to his young F1 racing resume. He became the main contender against the legendary Jackie Stewart, who he often fought with wheel to wheel. He finished the 1969 season as runner-up, just behind Stewart. Nice.
And they also got signed the same year, too. Mm-hmm. I think when Tyrell signed Jackie Ickx, they also signed Jackie Stewart to a higher class, like F2 or F1, same year.
See.
He was always kind of like a little bit in a rivalry with Jackie Stewart. Ooh. Also because they had the same name.
Yeah.
In many of his interviews over the years, Jackie has said something to the effect of, "I never dreamed of becoming a racing driver. In the beginning, I wanted to be a gardener."
This interview took place in America, which is why he sounded American.
Yeah. Yeah. In another life, Jackie might have been entering his 25th year buying seeds and studying how different soils can interact with each other to produce the best tomatoes.
Hmm.
But in this life, Jackie cemented his legacy as a racer at 25 years old at the 24 Hours of Le Mans and began an unprecedented run of success in the grueling endurance race that would define his career. Jackie's first Le Mans outing in 1969 featured an absolutely sensational battle with Porsche's premier driver, Hans Herrmann. This particular race has gone down as one of the most, if not the most, exciting races in the history of the event. But for Jackie, the race began with an act of protest. A traditional part of this race at the time was the appropriately named Le Mans start. The drivers didn't actually start in their vehicles, but had to run across the track to their cars, shut the door, harness themselves in, start up, and take off. To gain an advantage on their competitors, many drivers would fasten their harnesses while driving, and many wouldn't even have fully closed the door while they were peeling away. Over the many years Le Mans had been run up to this point, this start had become controversial due to the many unnecessary injuries and completely avoidable fatalities due to safety checks being skipped over during the chaotic start.
This is like when your dad would get mad at you for leaving 5 minutes later than he wanted on the 9-hour drive to grandma's house.
Yeah, we're going to stop to pee and to eat lunch.
Go, let's go. Come on. It is 8:05. It's a 9-hour drive. You know, just get buckled. Yeah. You know, it's fine.
Like, who cares? Like, grandma kind of sucks anyway. Like,
you shut your mouth about your grandmother. She is a wonderful woman. Put your diaper on. No one talks like that about my mom except for me. That's where I learned it from, Dad.
Yeah.
I learned it from watching you.
Yeah.
Having seen firsthand the needless loss of life in motorsport, Jackie decided he would take a stand. In a defiant move, when the race began, he calmly walked to his car and properly strapped himself in before setting off.
Do, 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 do. I'm walking to my car. Do, 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 do,
do. It was voiced over. That was what they had on the newsreel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Read it.
Have you seen that?
Confidently to his car. Ripping to my car. Gonna buckle myself. Gonna cut the door.
When I was doing the driver's test, I immediately, he's like, "All right, turn left here." And I turned right.
What? What? Why?
I was nervous.
That's hilarious.
Still passed.
I told someone this the other day because it was Dave. Dave Brown.
Dave.
Had to retake his eyesight test for his driver's license. And he was like, they were like, "Close your one eye." And he thought that one of his eyes was like the dominant one, and he closed it and realized he couldn't see anything. And somehow guessed every letter based on like the blurry shape of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I haven't told anyone this yet, but I know, like, I listened to them before, you know, you're waiting in line about to do your thing. And they always ask for the same line. And so I just memorized the line before I go up and take my eye test.
Can't see a damn thing.
Seems irresponsible.
My license. Right?
Big shout out to Dave. Check out the Brett DeMott show.
Yeah.
To hear Dave.
Buddy Fun Jr.
So funny, dude.
Really funny.
Great show.
This protest landed him at the back of the grid, but the careful start proved its point when John Wolfe crashed and died on the very first lap. The rest of the race was a nail biter, with the last 4 hours crescendoing into an intensely close race. Jackie and his teammate Jackie Oliver, why is he always with another Jackie? Was it that popular of a name back in the day?
I guess so, dude.
So Jackie.
It's just Jackie's short for a lot of things.
Jacketh.
Jackith, Jackariah, Jacoba.
Jackfruit.
So, yeah, it's a very common. So that's why everybody just makes it Jackie. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jackie and his teammate Jackie Oliver drove GT40s, which was considered to be an outdated and underperforming car compared to the primary competitors, which earned them the nickname the old lady for their GT40.
Huh.
It would be the Porsche team of Hans Herrmann and Gerard LaRousse in their 908s that would give the two Jackies and their Fords a run for their money. Going into the final hour, Ickx and Herrmann were less than 10 seconds apart on the same lap. and both cars were feeling the strain of having been driven hard for over 23 hours straight. The Porsche was down on power, and the Ford had problems with the exhaust. They took turns overtaking each other, lap after lap, until the end was in sight. Ickx crossed the finish line ahead of Herman in what he thought was the last lap, but he had misjudged the timing. With a minute left on the clock, the two had to complete another lap, and Ickx had to think fast. Ickx. It's actually Ickx. We've been saying it wrong the whole time.
Yikes. Sorry for his name's Yikes. Ickx.
Is it Ickx?
Yeah.
Ickx.
Ickx.
All right. Ickx. Just keep saying Ickx.
Yeah.
Gives me a case of those.
I'll take a case of those.
All right. All right, pretty lady.
So Jackie had to think fast. His Ford GT40 had only ever done 23 laps with the amount of fuel it could hold. Now on the 24th lap, he had to drive harder than ever, and he had to be mindful about fuel consumption. Jackie led into the Mulsanne straight, but let off the throttle to let Herman pass. In Herman's mind, the GT40 was sputtering from lack of fuel, and victory was a given. In reality, Jackie was drafting behind the 908 to save fuel, waiting until the right moment to strike.
Smart.
As the Mulsanne corner grew on the horizon, he saw his opportunity. He slingshotted around Herman into the Mulsanne corner, then went full throttle with what drops and fumes of gas he had left. Jackie crossed the finish line an incredible 390 feet ahead of the Porsche, the narrowest competitive margin of any Le Mans finish in history.
Wow.
Just for context, the GT40s that won in 1966, I want to say, they did a photo finish where they intentionally slowed down to get both the cars in frame.
Yeah, I remember Ken Miles got screwed out of that first
place. Because there's like a whole story. It's really interesting. Jackie stood on the podium and dedicated his win to fellow racer Lucien Bianchi, who was killed a year before and had contributed to the GT40's win the previous 24 hours of Le Mans. Thanks to Jackie, this was the last Le Mans that featured the running start.
Wow. Yeah, they're like, I guess we look like assholes, huh?
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
The 1970 Formula One season saw Jackie return to Ferrari. In his first race of the season, he suffered a devastating crash at the Spanish Grand Prix at the Jarama Circuit. In the opening lap, he misjudged the distance to a turn, braked too late, and collided with his Le Mans teammate Jackie Oliver. The car skidded towards the barriers and exploded, leaving a fireball in their wake. Jackie, soaked in gas from the ruptured fuel tank, caught fire. He escaped the burning wreckage and collapsed on the ground, where stewards were able to put out the flames, but not before sustaining burns. The cars took much longer to extinguish thanks to their magnesium alloy bodies, which burn bright and hot. And this accident would go down as one of the most horrific incidents in the sport, and one that still haunts Ickx to this day. You might think that this traumatic crash would make Ickx second-guess racing. However, he pressed on and didn't miss a single race for the rest of the season. After recovering for 17 short days, he was back behind the wheel. He went on to become a close contender for the F1 title, battling Jochen Rindt in his new Lotus 72. The two would go at it during the German Grand Prix, where Rindt proved victorious. Then again, at the Austrian Grand Prix, where Jackie took home the dub.
I gotta say, I rarely do my driving sim anymore, just because baby stuff. But
baby stuff, yeah.
I thought because you got in a big sim crash, and you just can't get your mind in the zone.
Yeah, my gaming computer started on fire and it took 4 days to put out. Yeah. But I do, whenever I have a chance, I hop in that Lotus 72. That's my car of choice when I do the sim.
Oh yeah.
And it's just super fun, super light and dippy, and go to like Coda and do a couple laps and then go tend to the baby again.
Those vintage cars are fun on the Assetto Corsa
time.
Unfortunately, tragedy struck once more at the 1970 Italian Grand Prix. Jochen Rindt was involved in an accident during qualifying that took his life. Jackie spent the rest of the season earning points towards a championship, but ultimately placed second behind Rindt's posthumous F1 championship victory. Jackie has said he was relieved he got second because he would not want to win against a deceased Rindt. This second place victory was also the closest Jackie would come to the F1 crown. He placed fourth in the next two seasons and ultimately left Ferrari for good in 1973. In his mind, Ferrari's cars were going downhill and were not fit to compete. Unbeknownst to him, they would take home six manufacturers' titles in F1 for the next 10 years. He continued on as an occasional F1 driver through the 70s, but it was endurance racing where he truly shined and continued to define his career.
What a bummer.
Yeah.
That's like selling your Bitcoin at $12,000 and be like, it's never going to be higher than this.
It's just like that, Joe. You're right.
Yeah. Did I tell you that I bought Willow Springs?
That was you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, after a few disappointing F1 seasons, Jackie felt the need to bounce back after 1970. And was here he entered his prime Le Mans years, driving a Gulf Cosworth DFV-powered Mirage GR8 Ford alongside Derek Bell in the 1975 running of Le Mans. Jackie claimed his second victory in the harrowing endurance race, beating out second place by a single lap. This was the start of a 3-year winning streak at Le Mans, albeit with a different team. Starting in 1976 and continuing until his retirement, Jackie was a factory driver for Porsche. In his year with the team, Jackie took home the grand prize with co-driver Thijs van Lennep, who announced his retirement immediately after the race. Their Porsche 936 was the first forced induction car to win at Le Mans since Bugatti won in 1939 with a 3.3-liter supercharged straight 8.
That's my favorite engine of all time.
Jackie raced in the 1977 running of Le Mans with Martini Racing in a new twin-turbo Porsche 936. Porsche and the twin-turbo V6 Renaults were the favorites going into the race, but unfortunately, Jackie's 936 faced devastating problems during his co-driver Henri Pescalaro's stint early on. That's a great name.
Pescarolo.
Yeah.
Pescarolo. My bad. Eakes was transferred to their sister team's car, which was stuck in a disappointing 41st place, 15 laps behind the race leader. With nothing to lose, Jackie was told he could drive as hard and as fast as he could, so he did just that. Throughout the night, Jackie drove at a feverish pace. As he was making up laps on his competition, the Renaults started dropping out. First, it was Patrick Tambay, who was in fourth place when his engine died 12 hours into the race. Then, 5 hours later at 9 a.m., the Renault, driven by Jean-Pierre Jabouille and Derek Bell, suffered a burned out piston and had to retire. Before long, Jackie was in the lead. After a grueling 11 hours behind the wheel and 40 places gained, he pitted to let his partners take over. Good God.
It's insane, yeah. Right?
That's the craziest thing I think I've ever read on this show. Maybe not ever, but that's insanely impressive. Wow. After another Renault retired, the Porsche was a comfortable 19 laps ahead of the second-place Mirage M8. With only 45 minutes left in the race, co-driver Jürgen Barth pitted after one of the cylinders stopped firing.
I feel like British people would say Mirage weird, like, Mirage.
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 I don't know. The engineers had enough time to fix the engine and let it cool off before sending Barth on his way again. 936 rolled across the finish line 11 laps ahead of second place, which was the largest winning gap of the decade. Had it not been for Jackie's marathon in the dead of the night, who knows where the team would have placed. That's 41st. So and crazy.
41st
dude.
To first within 11 hours.
That's so crazy.
And also just the the dichotomy of having won the other races by less than a lap and less than, 400 feet.
So,
the biggest, lap deficit of the decade.
That's range, baby. Overall, Jackie would claim 6 total Le Mans victories, 3 of them with Derek Bell by his side, earning himself the nickname Monsieur Le Mans. His last Le Mans victory came in 1982 with a Porsche 956. It would take until 2005 before his overall Le Mans win record would be broken by Tom Christensen to overtake Jackie in total wins.
Jackie's driving career slowly faded after his last Le Mans win with one outlier, the 1983 Paris-Dakar Rally.
Oh, here we go.
This notorious off-road endurance race crossed the Tenere Desert in the South Sahara. Jackie and Claude Brosseur would claim victory in the rally with the Mercedes 280G.
Whoa.
Outside of racing, this event also was very important to Jackie as he developed a love for Africa that would endure well beyond his racing years.
Dude, this G is sick. This 280G. Yeah. That is so cool.
That's when it still looked very army.
It's very army. It looked like a tractor, dude.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Jackie officially retired from driving in 1985, but he wasn't finished with Le Mans. Listeners of Past Gas will surely remember Jackie's involvement with Mazda Speed from episode 229 in our 4-parter on Mazda. But in case you missed it, here's a refresher. Mazda was dead set on conquering Le Mans throughout the 1980s and into the early 90s. While the team had potential and a few strong showings, they were missing a key ingredient to success, veteran experience. And for this, they turned to Jackie. Mazda was in panic mode in 1990 as the FIA had just announced that the rotary engine they had spent the better part of the decade building a car around would be banned the following season. If anyone could push the team over the top in fewer than 6 months in this do-or-die moment, it was Jackie. Eakes was hired as team manager, and despite a strong showing by the team during the first half of the race, cooling issues began plaguing the Mazdas. By the end, only one of the three cars remained, finishing a dismal 20th.
Oh.
The team was given a lifeline after the race. The FIA announced it would delay its rotary ban an additional year. This time, the team had a year to perfect the car, and Jackie had a year to develop strategy and prepare the drivers. At an anxious team meeting a few hours before the 1991 Le Mans, Jackie gave a speech to the team. Knowing this was the Rotary's last chance and leaning on his own experience of trusting his cars to do the impossible and pushing them to their absolute limit, he told the drivers, "Let's go balls out. It doesn't matter if we crash or the car doesn't last."
That's sick. Put that on a shirt.
Yeah. Team designer Nigel Stroud later said of the moment, "Once the drivers heard from Eakes, it sealed it. To them, he was God." With the help of Jackie's leadership, the Mazda Speed took the win, becoming the first ever Japanese manufacturer and non-piston engine powered car to win the race.
That's cool, man.
That's super cool.
What could have been a quiet life of weeds and raised bed plots turned into a historic run of titles and records. In his final career stats, Jackie walked away with winning 8 Grand Prix, 6 Le Mans, and numerous other wins at tracks like Daytona, Sebrings, and Watkins Glen. He still holds the record for second most Le Mans wins. He recorded a total of 565 auto and motorcycle races in his career. Outside of the racing world, he is known for being humble and compassionate. He gives lots of credit to his team and fellow drivers for being able to accomplish what he did. Today, the 80-year-old legend resides in Monaco with his family and remains involved in racing as a mentor to his daughter, Vanina. Jackie Eakes has forever left a huge mark in motorsport. He proved that you could use bad weather to your advantage, that you could conquer multiple disciplines and grueling endurance races, and that you don't have to sacrifice common sense and safety to be a champion.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I have so much respect for this dude.
That was a great story.
We got some listener mail. This is from Marine. "Hey, guys. Longtime listener from Belgium here. I'm really enjoying the show and look forward to new episodes each week."
All right.
"Belgium mostly only gets mentioned when it's about Spa-Francorchamps, but last week Volvo Ghent got mentioned. That factory is still going. In fact, my oldest daughter recently applied for a summer job there."
Nice.
"She's into cars as well, and her girlfriend drives a first-generation Miata."
Hell yeah, dude.
"Makes me kind of jealous, of course, but because I also have a small two-seater classic, a Fiat X19, but it doesn't drive yet. At the moment, it's hanging on a self-made rotisserie to do some repairs.
Very cool.
And in the future, I would like to convert it to electric." That's actually a pretty good electric swap.
It's very cool. I love these things.
It looks like a Porsche 914, right?
Yeah, a pointy 914.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Joe.
I was looking at them for some reason. I was like, I think I want to buy a Fiat X19 like 4 years ago. "It's a very small wedgie car with a lot of clever details and some shared parts with the Countach.
Get out of here.
Since it was also designed by the fantastic Marcello Gandini, who gets mentioned on the show sometimes."
We love Marcello Gandini.
Yeah. "Has there been a full episode about him? Definitely designed enough great looking cars to fill an entire episode. My favorite by far is the Alfa Romeo Carabo, which still looks super futuristic today. Keep your juicy slug slimed up." Or something Joe said. "Greetings, Marine."
Carabo.
Thank you, Marine.
Dude, the Carabo looks sick. Yeah. So we are always keeping that juicy slug slimed up. Thank you for your email, Maureen. We are going, we read listener mail all the time. So if you have a message for us, hit us up at passgas@donutmedia.com and we might read your email on the air. In the meantime, though, follow the boys at Fitz Bardo, at Joji Weber, and you can follow me if you'd like at Nolan J. Sykes. Make sure to follow Donut Podcasts on Instagram. You get some behind the scenes, not really behind the scenes, you get more clips from the shows Big Three and Past Gas over there on Instagram. And also some fun quiz stuff on our stories.
Yeah, Audrey does amazing quizzes. Together.
It's really fun. I do it every time, and I'm right.
I know. I read the scripts, and I still
miss them. Yeah, I've been the same.
I've definitely made some. It's fun. A lot of fun. So make sure you follow the show there. Big thank you to our crew, John Medina and Audrey Holden, over there behind the mixing board.
And our writer this week, Beth Alexandroff. She is on my baseball team.
Oh.
So, yeah, dude. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.